on. Our condolences as our committee, as team members of sport, arts and culture, we've seen what is going on in the sectors and in our sport fraternity, those who left us to go and play abroad. Others, they are winning, others, they are losing. But we can say that we are proud, even if they lost some of them, but the way that they are playing the girls, both Springbok and netball, the fact remains that they are there presenting us. The sport is a game, can lose, can win, but we're just proud of them. The cricket also is out there. Soccer, everything. At least we're part of the world. And in those words, I do welcome you. And I would love to say that we have agenda in front of us, and then we expecting that Auditor General is with us, the South African Hockey with us, let alone that the department is obviously with us. If now I can ask apologies, starting with the committee members, to the department, and then to the hockey. May I have an apology? Apologies, starting with the department. I've had greetings to acting DJ.
Thank you, Chair. There is an apology that was presented by the minister in writing. I'm still going to check with the DM's office whether she will be coming. So that's the apology, Chairperson and honorable members, that I would want to present. Thank you.
What is the apology?
Madam Chair.
Yes. Yes, so.
I do have apologies from the minister and the deputy minister. Madam Chair, the minister will not be able to join the meeting because he is attending a summit on the launch of UNESCO declared International Decade of Indigenous Languages. And the deputy minister will be attending a cabinet committee meeting. We also have an apology from Mr. Tandek, who is experiencing power supply interruptions in her area. She might be able to join if that has come to an end, but she has tendered her apology, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other apology, maybe from honorable members, which you didn't submit to the Secretariat, you are allowed to do so in the meeting. Okay. Let me now. Morning, Honorable Adams.
I'm sorry to give the apology, but I didn't hear that it come from the staff member Zoleka. I noticed that member Malumane is writing exams this week, and I didn't see her on the platform. That's why I think it might be because of the writing of her exams. Thank you.
Well, I'm noting that information from you, honorable member. Any other
yes
let's pass
yes,
on.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
We did receive an apology from the president of South African Hockey Association. He will be joining the meeting a little bit late because he is traveling. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, in that note, I'm presenting the apologies to the meeting. Can you take out the agenda, the notice, the agenda? Honourable members, I'm presenting the apologies to you.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honourable Adams.
I move for the adoption of the agenda, of the apologies. I thank you.
Any second or anything that someone want to say, comments or whatever. Let me take that the
I'm seconding the adoption of the apologies.
Apology. Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, in the next item on our agenda, as I welcomed already all of you, it's Auditor General. I don't hear anything about them, which means they don't have any apologies. Now, according to agenda, let's get the briefing on the outcomes of the department to Auditor General.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to allow us to present the audit outcomes for the financial year 2021-2022. I'm joined, my name is Mbali Sotesi. I'm joined also by Ms. Umphimisisikebe, who will also be presenting the outcomes with myself. I will start off with the presentation and then she will complete the later part of the presentation. Chairperson, Ms. Sikebe had asked for permission to be able to share the presentation. I'm just not sure if she is sorted now. Can I just take 1 minute to confirm that?
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair. She has been permitted to share.
Okay. Do so.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I start, I also want to greet the acting DT and our colleagues from the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture. Chairperson, we also, as the Auditor General, have a role to play to support the committee in terms of the budgetary review and recommendations report. We do so by presenting the outcomes and making certain recommendations. I will start off with our promise as Auditor General, our mission, which says that we exist, we are a constitutional mandate, and we exist to strengthen this country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. And we do that through the auditing that we are doing in order to build public confidence. Then moving on to the next slide on the presentation, that's where we highlight all the role players in the accountability ecosystem. And we are doing so because as the Auditor General, we have now pronounced on a new strategy, which is Culture Shift 2030. And what we mean by culture shift is that we want to see most of our auditees moving towards doing good in the public sector for the benefit of the citizen. So I'd like to take just a few minutes to take you through this accountability ecosystem so that we once again highlight the importance of all role players doing their part in ensuring that the citizen of this country benefits in the end. So we start off on the left-hand side. And that's where we have officials and senior management. They have an important role because that's where it all starts. They are there to ensure that there's proper record keeping, they record transactions in an appropriate manner, and then there must be reviews also that take place to ensure that that information is credible in the end, because that information is what then at the end of the day becomes the financial statements or gets to become the annual performance report, which is part of the annual report that the entities present. So it's important that they ensure that the checks and balances are in place from the word go. Senior management includes positions like the chief financial officer, the head of supply chain management, the chief information officer. Those are the people that are supposed then to monitor and do necessary reviews. For instance, when it comes to compliance, we expect that those role players will ensure that entities do comply with all the legislative requirements. Then we have the accounting officer and the accounting authority. These are the people that are driving the entities or the departments. And their role is also important in that they must provide oversight to ensure that necessary internal controls are in place to ensure that there's full compliance. And most importantly, to ensure that there's consequence management if things do not go accordingly, in that officials or senior management may not be adhering to legislation or they may not be reporting accurately as required. Then we have our internal audit unit. The internal audit unit is a legislative requirement which is also contained in the PFMA to ensure that they support the accounting officer in terms of reviewing internal controls, to ensure that there are no deficiencies in internal controls. And if the preventative controls are in place, the entity or the department will then be able to report information that is credible to all the stakeholders. They also look at compliance with legislation and also risk management to support the accounting officer. Then you have the audit committee. Their role is also legislated in the PFMA, and it is expected that they must provide independent assurance to the accounting officer. The audit committee works through the internal audit function. So if there's no proper or capacitated internal audit, the audit committee's role can also be affected. So the internal audit function reports functionally to the audit committee and administratively to the accounting officer. So the audit committee in the main then uses the work of internal audit to provide that independent assurance to the accounting officer on whether the internal control environment is appropriate as required to ensure that in the end, again, the reports that are presented are credible. So they have quite an important role to play to advise then the accounting officer or the accounting authority if there are gaps in the internal control environment or the risks are not properly mitigated in that particular environment. Then we have the executive authority. So the executive authority also has a role to play in that they guide the department in ensuring that they deliver on their mandate. So on a quarterly basis, the accounting officer authority is required by law to report to the executive authority on how far they are in terms of implementing the annual performance plans. So the executive authority is then required to ensure that they call the accounting officer authority to account in case they find that in their reporting there are gaps in terms of implementing the APTs or what is required in terms of their performance, or to review the corrective actions that will be indicated by the accounting officer where there are gaps in terms of them achieving the set indicators or targets. They also have a role to play in terms of ensuring that consequence management does take place, in that they must ensure that the accounting officer does what is required in terms of the PFMA in as far as implementation of consequence management is concerned. And then we have the national executive leadership, and then we also have the supporting departments like the public sector and administration, national treasury, planning, monitoring, and evaluation. These we call the coordinating departments because they are there to play a certain role. For instance, national treasury, they are responsible for the accounting standards in the public sector in the main with the department, and also procurement legislation. So they have an important role to play in terms of providing then guidance to the departments in as far as that area is concerned. Same with planning, monitoring and evaluation. They review the APPs that the departments submit. Then they have to provide feedback to the departments where, for instance, those indicators are not aligned to the mandate, or it can be that those indicators are not meeting the SMART principles. Then you have Parliament, where you have the Portfolio Committee and SCOPA, and you are here today then to support the Portfolio Committee in playing your role around monitoring and oversight, as indicated in Rule 227. Then we have ourselves as Auditor General also in that circle, in that we do our work of auditing the public sector and then provide our stakeholders with insights. And of course, those insights, we start providing them to the accounting officer, the executive authority, and then to this platform, which is the Parliament. So we do that to drive influence, because we are saying that with our culture shift strategy, we want to move all of our auditees towards doing good. And doing good means that they are ensuring that they meet their mandate so that the citizen can benefit. And in instances where the entities or the departments are then not able to implement our recommendations as part of our influence, we will then do enforcement, and then we'll do that through the material irregularity process, whereby we can issue a material irregularity and require of the accounting officer to take certain steps to address them. And if they don't, we then enforce then the legislation in terms of the Public Audit Act, whether we issue recommendations or any other steps that are indicated in the law. So, Chairperson, that's the accountability ecosystem that we are highlighting as part of our strategy as we are moving forward and trying to move our auditees away from doing just the basics, or some are even doing harm in that they are not aligned with their mandate and the citizen is not getting the benefit. So it's important that all the role players do what is required of them so that there's accountability and transparency in terms of and the public sector. Chairperson, I will then move over to highlight the outcomes of this portfolio for the year under review, but also looking back to the first year of administration, which it was 2019. So, Chairperson, the first 2 years of administration, we had 29 auditees, and that was because it was before the merger of sport and recreation and arts and culture, which is now one department. So from 2021, we then had 28 auditees. So what we saw from the first year of administration was that there was some slight improvement on the audit outcomes, in particular in 2021. We saw an increase in auditees that were receiving clean audit outcomes. And then again, this year, we've seen some regression in that there were some auditees that moved in particular from clean audit to unqualified audit findings. And then I will unpack that one shortly. But all we're saying is that there's still more work to be done in the portfolio to move our auditees towards a clean administration. Chairperson, this slide now shows us the movement from the previous year, as I was just saying now, that we are concerned about the regression. You will note that there were 6 auditees that regressed in the current year, and all of them regressed from a clean audit. 5 moved to unqualified with findings, and 1 moved to qualified with findings. So maybe just to quickly highlight those. Firstly, let's talk about the improvements made before I move quickly to regressions. There were 3 auditees that moved from unqualified audit findings, those being South African Heritage Resources Agency, which moved to a clean audit. 10 SA Language Board also moved from unqualified to unqualified with no findings, which is a clean audit. The African Museum moved from a qualified audit to a clean audit. Then the fourth one that moved was the National Film and Video Foundation, also from a qualification to unqualified with findings. Then we have a number of auditees that remained unchanged. However, we want to start off with the seven that remained on the clean audit outcome. Those seven entities: the William Humphreys Art Gallery, National Museum, Mzunduzi, SA Institute for Drug Free Sport, KwaZulu-Natal Museum at Cape, and the Playhouse Company. So those remained on the clean audit outcome. Then on the area of unqualified findings, out of the portfolio of 28 entities, there are 15 that are in that category, and 9 of them were in the same category last year, which includes the department itself, Market Theatre, Freedom Park, Performing Arts Centre of the Free State, the National Arts Council, AMAZU SA, Luthuli Museum, Boxing SA, and the War Museum for the Boers. So the regressions that I mentioned earlier, which all moved from a clean audit to unqualified findings, were the Robben Island Museum, National Heritage Council, Gitsong SA Library for the Blind, and Nelson Mandela Museum. In the main, some of these entities, they moved away from that category because they couldn't provide credible financial statements. So the financials that they submitted for audit had material misstatements, and that includes the National Heritage Council and the Zong Museum and Nelson Mandela Museum. Robben Island had findings on consequence management and also on performance reporting. Then with SA Library for the Blind, they also had findings on compliance relating to implementation of consequence management. The last category is on qualified findings, where we have three DTs, and that is the Science Day Theatre. They were in the similar category last year as well. They are qualified with National Library, also qualified last year. And a similar issue has been reported as an audit to a qualification because they had material misstatements that they couldn't resolve relating to heritage assets. So that's the picture. Chairperson, we then move to the form. So you will note that our presentation for this is on service delivery because we want to see an impact on the performance planning and reporting and what is the impact of the findings on service delivery. So starting off on the left, we look at the quality of the performance report that is submitted to us for audit. So for the portfolio, you note that 22 audits submitted there were no changes that were required to move them then to being with no findings. There were two entities that were able to correct misstatements that we identified and then moved with that number moved to 24, meaning that 24 then had reports that were credible at the end of the audit process. And then there were four auditees then that still remained with reports that had findings either on usefulness of that particular report or on the reliability of the report, and then highlight those particular entities. Starting off with AMAZU Museum, they had findings on planning for service delivery, meaning that how they planned their target and indicators was not specific in that it didn't clearly identify the nation required level of performance. It was not measurable, and also there were no timelines set for delivery of a particular performance. So AMAZU then had findings on the usefulness thereof, and they also had findings on reliability of the report, in that we found that their reported achievement for a particular indicator did not agree with supporting documentation, which impacts then on the credibility of the report. Then with NSVF and Boxing SA, they also had findings in that targets, which were indicated in the annual performance plan, were not reported on in the annual performance report. So meaning that there was misalignment in their reporting between what was planned in the APP and what they eventually reported in the annual report. With Robben Island, we couldn't find sufficient evidence to support their reported achievement for one particular indicator, where they indicated an achievement of 3,076 against a target of 2,000. So then we say, what is the impact then of these findings? One of the findings, the first one that relates to planning, in particular for Amazwi, it means then that this will have a negative impact on the nature and level of performance reported by them, because their measurement processes are not clearly defined. With NSVF and Boxing SA, the issue or the impact thereof is that they are not reporting in line with what was approved in the annual performance plans, and therefore they may not track all the key indicators that are linked to their respective mandates, resulting in negative impact on the service delivery. And then lastly, with Amazwi and Robben Island, that had findings now on the reliability of the report, it means that what they are presenting to a certain extent for those particular indicators in their annual report is not credible and may impact the decisions that are taken going forward. Moving on then to the next slide, where we look at performance against target. Chairperson, because this portfolio is huge, it has 28 entities, our focus in this respect was on the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture. We looked at their achievements as they have reported them in the annual report. And we also looked at some of the indicators that are linked to priority six, which they've highlighted and would want to achieve them in terms of the medium-term strategic framework. And then we also assessed then whether they achieved any of these particular indicators that are linked to priority six. So in the main, the department achieved 76% of their planned performance, meaning that 24% then of the indicators were not achieved for this current financial year. So in terms of the key targets now linked to priority six, the two that were not achieved, the first one relates to the number of provincial community arts development programs implemented per year, and also the number of moral regeneration projects supported by government. So what does that mean? This means that it may have an impact them on their achieving this MTSF targets that are planned to be achieved by 2024. The key indicator of moral regeneration projects supported by government has not been achieved during the years that it has been included in the APP, and therefore, because its objectives are linked to gender-based violence, safety in communities, and building a nation with good morals, it may have impact then on those particular objectives of the department. There's also the underachievement on the number of moral regeneration projects, on the number of provincial community arts development programs, which also affects the objectives of the department around ensuring that there are enough of these facilities in the arts and culture space. So Chairperson and honorable members would also like for the committee to ask the department perhaps to give a broad view on how far they are in terms of all these MTSF targets, and what are the plans to ensure that they achieve them by 2024, meaning that they should track then the progress that has been made up to this point and give some comfort whether they will be able then to achieve the MTSF targets by 2024. And again, Chairperson, like I indicated, our focus was on the department, but the performance of all the other entities in this portfolio is included in the annual performance in their annual reports, and therefore it will be important then for the other accounting authorities also to just reflect on the progress that they've made in the current year achieve the planned targets and indicators in terms of their own APPs. Then the last part on performance information that we wanted to highlight was once again on these key indicators that were not achieved, and the reasons as indicated by the department for non-achievement. So when you look at the first indicator on the number of provincial community active loan programs, there were 9 that were targeted and the actual performance was 7. And then on the moral regeneration projects, there were 5 that were targeted and 9 were achieved. And the reasons are similar.
The recording has stopped. This meeting is being recorded.
The department has indicated that it was because there was inadequate corroborating evidence to support the work that was and therefore these indicators were not achieved. Chairperson, which is program 3, which was the program that we selected for audit in the year under review. So the department should then be able to outline what they are going to do going forward, as I indicated in the previous slide, to catch up and ensure that they achieve the MTSF indicators and targets linked to these particular indicators that were not achieved. Chairperson, at this point, I'd like to hand over then to Umphumezi to continue with the next slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Umphumezi. Bali.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let me continue. Okay. I'm not sure if Umphumezi has a challenge unmuting.
Okay.
Okay.
Continue.
Thank you. So if you can move Umphumezi to the previous slide before I move to material irregularities. Thank you. So on this particular slide, Chair, we look at the implementation of the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package, which was one of the initiatives that the department was running from the previous financial year. So the department was allocated 680 million for this particular initiative, which was aimed at responding to COVID-19 pandemic in terms of the economy, the livelihood, and jobs. So the department then used the entities within a portfolio to implement this PESP initiative. So monies were transferred to entities like the NAC, the NSDF, National Library, and others in order to ensure that the department will meet the targeted number of jobs as set by the presidency. So what we noted then when we did our evaluation to check whether the department met the objectives was that at the National Arts Council, there was poor administration of this particular initiative in that there were challenges experienced and there were some irregularities that were raised regarding the inappropriate administration of the project by the council and management. And in the end, this called for an investigation that was commissioned by the Minister, a forensic investigation, which was concluded during September 2021, which pointed out some gross violations of the policy and also where the entity then overcommitted in terms of the amount that needed to be allocated. So the entity then had to prioritize funds from other projects because they had overcommitted for this particular initiative. So far the NEC had paid out 307 million and they are still in process to pay out 1.9 million to finalize the initiative. But at the 31 March 2022, the NEC had created 21,871 jobs against a target of 17,000. with regards to the National Film and Video Foundation, they underachieved in terms of the first targets at 31 March 2022. So they were allocated 140 million by the department, and the third target was 8,714 jobs that needed to be created. So they only created, as at year end, 7,033 jobs and had spent 138 million. So meaning that there were still 2 million left that needed to be spent. And according to management, this underachievement was attributed to a number of requests that they received from the grant recipients to amend their project schedules for various reasons. So overall, there were some delays that the department experienced in implementing the other projects that are linked to this particular initiative. However, the department was able to overachieve in terms of the number of jobs that were created by the end of the financial year, in that the jobs that were created were in excess of 37,000, whereas the target was in the region of 34,000. So in terms of the impact, then we are again highlighting that despite the challenges that were noted in the implementation of the PERS initiative, the jobs created by the portfolio have exceeded the target set by the presidency. And then the cause where there's why there was overperformance was because the NAC had overcommitted the funding for PERS, as we have seen that they were way over the amount that was allocated. And in the end, then they've indicated that they will still have one more project that needed to be implemented with a completion date of 30 September 2022. So our recommendation to the accounting officer is to monitor then the implementation of the rollover funds relating to this project to ensure that it's completed successfully. And that includes other projects that we were behind, like the NFVF, which was still below the set target. Thank you. I then move over to material irregularities. So for the current year under review, 2021-22, can we move to the next slide, please? For the current year 2021-22, we implemented the material irregularity process at the following auditees, being the department itself, the Freedom Park, the Zong Museum, and the Penn South African Language Board. We are still then finalizing the plans for the rollout for the next year, 2022-23, and we'll be including more auditees as part of this material irregularity process. So just to recap, material irregularity means any non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty that is identified during an audit performed under the Public Audit Act. And that irregularity resulted in or is likely to result in a material financial loss, misuse, or loss of a material public resource, or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So that's the definition of a material irregularity. And the Auditor General then further steps, if the accounting officer does not appropriately deal with the material irregularity, and in terms of our mandate, that can allow us to either refer that material irregularity to relevant public bodies for further investigation, or make binding recommendations to resolve the material irregularity in the audit report. Or if they don't implement those recommendations, we can take binding remedial action for failure to do so. And then in the end, if the remedial actions are also not implemented, we can issue a certificate of debt for failure to implement remedial action if the MI was linked to a financial loss. Then in the next slide, Chairperson, we just indicate what will be the next course of action or the next steps and responsibilities once we have identified the material irregularity. The first one is where the accounting officer is dealing with the MI, meaning that they are implementing the right or appropriate actions to deal with MI, whether it's to improve controls or implement consequence management or recover the financial loss. The second one is where we then refer a material irregularity to a public body. So what is expected is that the accounting officer will cooperate with the public body and implement those remedial actions or recommendations made. The third one is where recommendations are included in the audit report, and the expectation is that the accounting authority will then implement those recommendations by the stipulated date in the audit report. Then the last one is where there's remedial action issued, and we will then expect that the accounting officer will implement those remedial actions by a stipulated date per the audit report, because if they don't do so, then we move to the last step of the certificate of debt. There's also then as particular responsibilities that relates to the executive and oversight, what we expect them to do where an MI has been identified. In all these instances, the executive authority has a role to play in terms of supporting the accounting officer in addressing that particular material irregularity and improving the controls. And this will apply to the instance number 1, 3, and 4, that they should be there to support and monitor the accounting authority or the accounting officer. We also expect then oversight, like a portfolio committee, to play a role in terms of monitoring progress or calling the accounting authority to provide feedback or to account on how far they are in addressing the material irregularity. And that will apply again to step number 1, where they are dealing with the MI, to recommendations, implementing recommendations, and also step 4, in terms of remedial action. When it comes to MIs that are referred to a public body, the portfolio committee will be expected to also call on that particular public body to come and report on the progress that they are making in terms of investigating that particular material irregularity and whether they've issued any form of remedial action in line with their mandate and the progress thereof. So that's the picture in terms of material irregularities. And testing for the review for the entities that where we implemented the MI process, we have not yet identified any material irregularities for the 4 entities. Thank you. Then we move forward to financial management as well as compliance with key legislation. So in this part, we start off by looking at the quality of financial reporting. So when we receive the financial statements, we also then give you an indication of whether those financial statements have the right quality in that they're accurate and complete in all material respects. So what we found is that some entities were lacking in terms of daily and monthly controls, in-year and year-end reporting processes, as well as the reviewing and monitoring of compliance in terms of the accounting standards. And that resulted in those entities then submitting financial statements that had material errors. So as we are showing in that picture, there were 13 auditees that submitted financial statements that had material misstatements at submission point. However, as we finalized the audit process, they were able to make material adjustments to those financial statements. And in the end, there were only 3 entities that could not resolve material misstatements in the financial statements. So what this shows us is that there's a weak control environment in some of them, 10 of them that submitted financial statements that contained material errors. So in the end, these entities, these 10 auditees, they only attained then the unqualified opinion because they were able to process the material adjustments to the financial statements. So that's 36% of the portfolio that were able to attain unqualified only because they processed material adjustments during the audit process. So the 3 entities then that had qualifications were State Theatre, Iziko, and National Library of SA. And these entities were not able to then process required adjustments so that their financial statements can fairly present their financial affairs So what this means is that the impact is that their reports are then not fully credible even after the audit process, because they were not able to deal with all the material misstatements. In this light, Chair and members, we just unpack those qualification areas that relate to the three entities. So with SA State Theatre, it's use a repeat qualification because even in the prior year, they were qualified on property, plant and equipment in that they were not able to conduct an impairment assessment as required by the standards. And also they did not fully account for their assets in the register and the financial statements. And that resulted then in the assets being presented that were not complete. And this is in the main due to inadequate internal controls in the environment around proper asset management. IZICO Museum, this is a new qualification area for them. They were qualified on heritage assets, which were not properly accounted for because we identified duplications in their asset register, and therefore, and also their assets, some of them were not presented or reported accordingly, resulting in the register not being complete. The National Library of SA also has a repeat qualification in that even last year, they were qualified on heritage assets. So they have not yet completed a process of identifying all these assets and ensuring that they are reported in the financial statements. So as a result, we then qualified them again on a similar matter. Chairperson, I move on to financial health. So we also assess the financial viability of the entities in the portfolio, but this assessment was limited to six auditees that are not classified as small auditees in terms of our methodology. So we just want to highlight here in the main the three entities on the right-hand side who ended up in a deficit at the end of the financial year, meaning that their revenue could not cover all the expenses. So this is Dizo Museum, Freedom Park, and Robben Island Museum. So what this means is that these entities in future, they may not be able to deliver as required by their mandate because they don't have the required funding to do so, which then impacts on the achievements in terms of the indicators and targets. Move on to compliance with key legislation as part of the audit process. What we're highlighting in this picture is that there were 18 auditees in this portfolio that had findings that were reported in their respective audit reports as it relates to non-compliance with key legislation. And the picture that we are also showing is that the 18 auditees, they remain unchanged, and then there were also six regressions, which aligns with the picture that we showed on the overview of the outcomes. So the most common areas of non-compliance are around procurement and contract management, quality of financial statements. There's quite a number of them that had issues on the quality of financial statements that had to pass material adjustments. Some were not able to, resulting in them being part of the qualification areas. Then the third item that is most common is prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There we highlight also the auditees that had that particular non-compliance. And lastly, effecting consequence management. There are also still entities that were not able to implement consequence management in relation to irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And in some instances where they had allegations that needed to be investigated. Then we also just unpack procurement and payments, because we noted that non-compliance with procurement legislation is also one of the common areas. So the detail in terms of these findings was mainly around processes that were not competitive and fair, which then resulted in that particular non-compliance being reported. And the entities in this regard that had these material findings in their audit reports, it was Boxing SA, Freedom Park, Luthuli Museum, Marcus Theatre and State Theatre. And all of these five entities, it was recurring non-compliance, meaning that we had reported it also in the previous financial year. Just to continue on procurement, there were also these other three entities which had findings on procurement, and it's also NSDF. And for them, it was a regression in that they didn't have this finding last year. The NAC is a repeat finding, and then SARA, it was a new finding that was reported. Then, Chairperson, we looked at irregular expenditure. We did an analysis to see who were the top contributors to the full amount of the 105.2 million reported for the portfolio in terms of the regular expenditure, which shows a significant increase if you compare it to the previous financial year. So the top five contributors to this irregular expenditure were the department itself with 59.7 million, the NAC with 20 million, the National Heritage Council with 4.5 million, the Penn SA Language Board with 3.6 million, and Lafayette Freedom Park with 2.8 million. The department in the main, the bigger part of that 59 million was because they didn't follow the DORA requirements, the Division of Revenue Act requirements, in that where they amended the payment schedules on the transfers, it was not submitted to National Treasury for approval in line with the requirements of the Division of Revenue Act. Or in cases where it was submitted, the department did not wait for approval before they processed those payments, which then resulted in non-compliance, and then it was an irregular expenditure. For the NAC, a bigger part of that 20 million was because they exceeded their budget, which is then non-compliance with the PFMA. Then the rest of the balance of the on the irregular expenditure was in the main related to procurement non-compliance, in that the processes were not properly followed by the entities. And we also further analyzed this impact into the pillars of procurement in terms of Section 217 of the Constitution. And our analysis showed that these entities then breached one or more of the pillars, in that the processes were not equitable or were not fair, cost-effective, transparent and competitive. And that analysis applies then to most of the entities that had non-compliance with procurement legislation, being the department, the NAC, DZONG, Boxing, Luthuli Museum, Freedom Park, Market Theatre, Parkos, the NHC, AMAZI, Pencil, ESIGO, SAIS, South African State Theatre, NFDS, NLSA, and the African Digital Museum. And then, Chairperson, we look at how far the entities are in terms of addressing the balance of irregular expenditure, whether they are implementing the right steps in terms of dealing with irregular expenditure. You can move to the next slide, please. So the departments are required then, or the entities by legislation, that once irregular expenditure has been identified, it must be dealt with. What this means is that there must be investigations done to discover what led to that irregular expenditure. And then once the investigation is finalized, the department must then take necessary steps. If it's required that the money must be recovered, they must do so. Or if it's required that they must implement disciplinary actions, that must also take place. So as we have indicated in one of the previous slides, that there were entities that had not implemented consequence management. That also shows in their balances of irregular expenditure, in that it continues to grow because they are not dealing with the irregular expenditure from the prior years. So the picture that you are showing here, Chairperson, is to show you the top five contributors to the 1.1 billion from prior areas that have not been dealt with. And this includes the department, the state theater, Robben Island and Parkhoff in the main that contribute mostly to the 1.1 billion still are not dealt with from the prior years. We also show how far they have addressed that 1.1 billion. You see that the small movement in that money that was recovered or in the process thereof was 146,000. What was condoned was 19 million, and what was written off was 3.6 million. So the amount that has not been dealt with is just over a billion rand. So the reasons thereof, like indicated, is mostly because effective consequence management processes have not been implemented, as there were no investigations conducted, and we've highlighted these particular entities that were not implementing consequence management. And a part of that amount, also 41% thereof, has been investigated, but the processes are not finalized in that the amounts may not have been condoned by National Treasury, or they may not have done disciplinary processes so that they can then submit to Treasury for condonation. We then move towards the conclusions and recommendations. So when you finalize the audit process, we then look back to say, what were the key root causes that resulted in the significant audit findings that we are reporting? So we could summarize these key root causes into three. The first one was a slow response in implementing adequate and effective preventative controls, which could mean that the entity may have had an action plan to address audit findings, but it was not properly monitored to ensure that it prevents repetitive audit findings, or the preventative controls were not strengthened enough to prevent findings. The second one was lack of consequence management. So if there is no consequence management, we'll continue to see officials or senior management not ensuring that there's full compliance with legislation. Instability or vacancies in key management, those also affect the progress that entities can make in terms of strengthening their controls or fully implementing their action plans. So our key recommendations then respond to those particular risk causes. In the main, the proper monitoring of the implementation on action plans to address the root causes, and also ensuring that the sufficient monitoring controls, in particular around supply chain management, and also the implementation of consequence management. The commitments that we received from the accounting office that caused the audit were in the main covering those two areas that we're highlighting, which is to monitor implementation of audit action plans, as well as consequence management within the department. Chairperson, after we finalized the audit, we also shared the audit outcomes for the whole portfolio with the minister, and we've invited the minister to also submit the commitments to address the findings going forward. And this update was made yesterday because we couldn't get them those particular commitments or notes before we finalized our presentation. So we've updated this last part here to indicate what we have received from the ministry in terms of the commitments going forward. And these are at the most aligned to the root causes, and also aligned to the commitments that are made by the accounting officer, in that the minister has also committed to obtain feedback from the department in terms of addressing audit action plans to ensure that the findings are eliminated or are reduced going forward, and also to get feedback from the accounting officer and the executive management in terms of implementation of consequence management. The issues that have been reported are addressed going forward. Chairperson and members, the last section of our presentation deals with our key message to the portfolio committee. Chairperson, in the previous year, we made certain recommendations to this committee for the committee to also assist in terms of the monitoring an oversight around the portfolio in the main to ensure that there's improvement in the audit outcomes. We also made a recommendation around consequence management, whereby we expected that this committee will also call on the executive and the accounting officer to account on what plans they're putting in place to ensure that consequence management is implemented for poor performance or transgressions which resulted in irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Our overall reflection is that the committee has had several interactions with the accounting officer and the executive, whereby they called them to account on what they were doing to address previous year findings and also the implementation of consequence management. We once again make some recommendations or highlight some key messages for the committee going forward. First one, that the committee obtains and actively track commitments made, as we've highlighted them, by the accounting officer or authority in terms of implementing action plans or any other corrective measures to ensure the improvement in the portfolio outcomes. We'd also want the committee to continue actively engaging with all the role players within the accountability ecosystem to ensure that appropriate measures are taken to implement consequence management. This may include other role players like the audit committee. As we've highlighted in the beginning, they also have a role to play in terms of this accountability ecosystem to also just indicate what they are doing in line with their legislated role to assist the departments or entities in addressing the issues that we are putting forward. The third one is that the committee should also assess the departments in public entity strategic and annual performance plans to ensure that these particular auditees, they plan and deliver in line with their respective mandates. Chair, as we've highlighted, there were certain auditees that did not report in line with what was planned in their ATPs. And also there are certain MTSF targets that need to be met, in particular by the department by 2024. So the committee should then call on the department and these particular entities to also reflect on their progress on this particular target. Lastly, Chair, once again, we ask that the committee continue to utilize the preventative control guides that is developed and shared in the past with the committee to assist you in your oversight functions so that you can be able to ask them the relevant questions as part of your oversight journey. Chairperson, that's our message to this committee. We thank you for the opportunity and we'll be taking questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mali. Hoping that the MPMT has joined you, because we'll be firing questions. But let me also take this opportunity to thank you and I'm suspecting that by giving us this detailed information, it's going to assist us when we are doing our BRRRs processes for planning of 2020-2023. And we do note those entities which others, they've been not improving, but hoping that honorable members, when they are firing the questions, and will be mostly questions fired to the department to get to know what they've done about these entities. Honorable members, initially I was thinking that we can do a joint discussion, but when we discuss with the secretariat, as we have adopted the agenda, now we are in that process of firing the questions, asking clarities to the AG. Let me take these hands. Thank you so much, and Honorable Sondi, Honorable Mhlongo, Honorable Sibiya, Honorable Joseph. I do have an information that Honorable Adams is on and off due to load shedding. So far, that's it's adding to Honorable Van Dijk, who was having that apology of the problem, but will accept them when they are back. Uzoleka will always looking at Honorable Adams. You will be looking so when they trying to get in, and you must assist, because Honorable Adams is saying now he must be admitted again. Thank you, Honorable members. Honorable Sondi.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And good morning to the Honorable members, the Office of the AG. And thank you for the opportunity, Chair. I have few questions, if not comments, because the Office of the Auditor General is very clear on the recommendations to the Portfolio Committee, which are our role of oversight as Portfolio Committee Chair. We welcome the presentation by the Auditor General, and we like it, Chair, when they emphasize one of the issues of the stability of the organization in terms of the entities as one of the contributors of some of the challenges of the irregular expenditures on the entities and the department. But firstly, we wish to say in entities must have a will to do good to improve their status of financial management. That's one thing that we want to raise, and also to strive to always put the corrective measures when they are implementing their key performance areas. It will assist moving forward. But most of all is that of the internal control and consequent management. Chair, we are noting with a concern that irregular expenditure has increased from 23.9 million in the financial year 2020 to 2021 to 105 million in 2021-2022 financial year, with the department contributing just above 57%, which is a very concern to the total irregular expenditure incurred across the portfolio. The Auditor General also notes that irregular expenditure is incomplete, as Ezigo Museum is still to determine a full amount it incurred in the financial year 2021-2022. Of the entities that incurred irregular expenditure, Chair, the AG briefing notes indicates that the root cause of the 15 entities is lack of effective implementation of consequence management to officials who do not comply with the SCM regulations, and thus committing irregular expenditure.
which means that 53% of entities are not adhering to the SCM regulation. That is our concern, Chair, which has indicated FS. With regard to the investigation, the department also need to provide us with an update on the matters highlighted in the AG briefing document. Of particular concern are matters of the disciplinary case against the CEO of National NAC and protracted investigation into the capital assets a matter of the entity Parkov. Those are the two issues that is of particular concern with regard to entities, Chair, that I would like to highlight. Ngiyabonga kwamanje, Chair, ngicela ukuma lapho. I would like the department to comment on these concerns that the Auditor General is raising and plans to mitigate the irregular expenditure in the financial year under review. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Sondi. Honorable Mshongo.
Thank you, Chair. We welcome the presentation from the AG and thanks for empowering us as a committee. So I wanted to ask a clarification question, especially to the AG, because she has highlighted things that we usually know and we are aware of. For an example, I'll speak out about NAC. Obviously, quality of financial statement is questionable. Prevention of irregular and unauthorized fruitless wasteful expenditure is there. I wanted to find out, can you give us details, ma'am, especially on the 20 million rent that is irregular? What are the details, especially with NAC? And what are the details on the procurement and contract management? Can I get the actual details, especially on the NAC? And what are the repeat findings which the NAC has done? Because I think we usually talk about repeat findings, but they don't even adhere, because I think usually you come with recommendation. Do they implement the recommendation from AG? Which recommendation which were recommended are not implemented to date? And maybe Mambali, advise us, you know, you're talking about financial statement that we must monitor and the action plan. I want to go to this issue. You wrote the letter last time regarding the National Orchestra and even regarding the NAC on its own. There's a reserve of 65 million rand money, which is with the Reserve Bank. Where does it come on the budget or on the financial statement? I've never seen it. Are you aware of? And why, if you have a reserve money and there's a shortage of 20 million, for an example, on the NAC, why that reserve is not used? And what is the purpose of the reserve funding? Maybe I'm not an accounting fundi. I think you will assist me to do my oversight work, because you speak of NAC poor administration, which you've seen. You know, on the, I need an advice. And what have you seen on the orchestra, the 59 million rent, 54 million rent has been used? They talk about MOI, sometimes MOU, which is confusingly, today is MOI, next week it's MOU. How for us to do an oversight work when the department changes its form, changes its report? I think even your findings, you're saying they report on the APP, they report something differently. When they report to us, something different. I think that's an impact on its own. And we have seen the weak controls, in fact, that they have. Now, I need an advice as a committee. Last time what we did, we had a metric to see what did they give us, what is an outstanding issue, especially on the X issue. Now, I wanted an advice on that, Chair, through you, Chairperson. And I wanted to find out on the because sometimes the department will tell us, and I want to give you, ma'am, assist us or assist me. They talk about implementing the white paper when it suits them. But when you see this outcome, it shows with the white paper, it's implemented sometimes for these three entities, which we talk about, Izigo, museum, and others, which are big culprit. Why they don't implement white paper? They implement white paper when it suits them. For an example, on the orchestra, we have different orchestras in different provinces, but this, no implementing the white paper when the department suits. How to mitigate that, because they tend to play with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Shongo. The next honorable member is Honorable Sibiya.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, morning to everyone. And thanks for the briefing from all ages. The Chairperson, in 2020, in year 2020 and 21, the AG flagged 8 outages with material findings. And again, in 2021 and 22, the number has increased to 18. What are the contributing factors to this increase? And to what extent has instability or vacancies influenced this increase? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me thank the AG for the valuable information sharing, building our capacity to the oversight. Chairperson, I want to start off with the last comment made by the AG, SA, about the previous recommendations and the recommendations. And I think our committee should really look at that previous recommendations. And I think we should then focus on those entities as highlighted by the AG. I also noted that the two departments, you know, that joined due to restructuring, shifted, I think, a bigger burden onto this committee about oversight, 28 entities. It's an enormous task that we have to carry out on oversight work. But I think we need to prioritize those entities and also the areas where the departments need to work on. But in the beginning, I heard there was a slight improvement, which is good news. And then later in the presentation, I've heard about the 1.1 billion, I think, it's under irregular expenditure for prior years. So the AG might just help us. Do we have to zoom into prior years, or where do we cut the line on prior years? And how do we deal with this committee? Must deal with this prior years, because if it just goes on and added every year, it just gets bigger and bigger. So we need to find a strategy how to deal with the prior years, and what our role should be there. Chairperson, then plans that are not measurable is a big concern, and I hope that the department must, I think it's a must be. The department must help us there on the entities that have plans that is not measurable in their intervention that they do. I also would like to know, Chairperson, the achievements of the department against the APP indicated it is 76% achieved. My question is to the department or the AG. The previous 2 years, it would be good to see. I unfortunately didn't follow up on that. What was the last 2 years prior to this financial year? Just that we can say that there's what the improvement is on the APP. on the achievements against the APP. I would like to know that. And then I would like to know what happened to the report, Chairperson, that the minister called an forensic investigation. So I don't know what happened to that report or what the report was saying. And I'm not sure if the NAC could handle all that money that was transferred, you know, from the 680 million that the department transferred to the entities. Maybe the entities, all of them, could not handle that money, although it was a specific time in COVID time, and there was tremendous stress on all departments and entities, you know, to come up with a plan to take us forth out of our health conditions and unemployment conditions due to COVID. So I understand that, but it obviously is something that everyone was prepared and ready for. It appears to be like that. But yes, then we also hear about overcommitment and on more jobs created than what was planned. So on the one side, that's good, but on the other side, it appears there was an overcommitment and a financial plan there just don't correspond. So, Chairperson, my question also is the internal audits, and as the AG explained, the processes from the committee to the executive and from the committee via the department through all the stakeholders or other departments to the executive. My question is, when there's internal audit and audit committees, are these entities not heeding the call and the warning and the concerns raised by the audit committees? Because that is supposed to be the first intervention of message that the entities must get, or the department must get, about something is not right and it needs to be corrected. And I know there could be differences of opinion on that report, but they have to find some solution on respecting the internal reports, committee reports. And then, of course, I think the big thing that the whole government is talking about, Chairperson, is consequence management. Now, I don't have the answer on consequence management, except that in some areas we hear about disciplinary hearings. That seems to me one area that everyone is trying to do something, but it's obviously a legal process. I think we spent quite a lot of money on litigation in our entities. Chairperson, my last point was the compliance with the key legislation, particularly on procurement and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which then brings again consequences management. So I think we must respect what the AG is saying, and the AG was also there in the past. They have done already issuing certificates, but I think as a committee, we need to zoom in on the information presented to us, particularly the entities that and the areas in certain areas where we need to zoom in and start with them, and as soon as possible get that entities in front of this committee so that we can also help the AG to lay down the rules. Because it's about service delivery, it's about our people out there, it's about taking our country forward, it's about nation building, social cohesion, it's about all the positive things that this committee and this department stands for, that we must help the department and the AG to achieve their goals. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, honorable members. I've got some few additions to you, honorable members, on the questions and clarity seeking questions. I wanted to check with you, Auditor General, on what you have said in the investigation from entities that the department must do some investigation. But if now you are saying about 5 auditees that are the cause of what we're having. I wanted to check if department and our good selves can call all those entities that are mentioned here to come and account together with the department. But what are you doing about now the department itself? Who's going to investigate? I'm hearing you saying that each department must investigate what happened and how are they going to account those other entities. But what about each department? Who's doing what? For instance, if the consequence management is not done by the department, but also that question will be raised with the department. What has been doing in order that if it's their management who's not doing the consequence management, but my problem is that if now it's the department itself, what are you saying? What have you done to do that, to assist on giving us the last report that you have got from each department? But also, I was looking at, I don't know which slide is this one, that it's having, I'm suspecting, I don't understand when you are pointing a concern of a fruitless and wasted expenditure which has been done, which was it was from 600,000, but now it's going to 5.1 million. And department is included, and the 11 auditees. As this committee, we've been knowing that each department sometimes is reporting to us because of the provinces which are not accounting. But I'm not sure getting if the provinces are not doing that, and that thing is firing back to the department. But here now, this is a bad reflection of so many percentage and billions that even when we're saying 59.7 million, it's our district, and maybe you know what did they say to you about that. Once we're going to ask them to explain to us, but how did they explain to you as Auditor General, let alone that the NHC 20 million, also I was just not understanding why these five irregular expenditure, which is about 105 million, that maybe, are you saying that until now there are no corrections on those? I'm suspecting you have identified, maybe the department is going to tell us what happened, but we do see achievements. But regression, it doesn't put our department to be amongst those departments who's doing well. But our oversight that we are giving assurance to the AG is that out of this report, we'll sit down as a committee, and maybe I'm 100% sure that the honorable members will support what I'm proposing, that we'll call a department with these entities which are not doing well. It's worse with the procurement and payments, and maybe it's my department also is going to account. We are noting that it's worse that we've been talking about these vacancies, which now you are also highlighting. We are aware that initially it was one department and then the major, and we were trying to check how long does it take in order that the vacancies must be filled. But if department has been accounting to us saying that it's a process, but can we now, both of us, a department and us being doing oversight, that that thing now made it that there must be these irregularities, those consequence management. Because if there are vacancies, surely there's some hindrance of the work. But we are appreciating and will plan our oversight to what you are giving us, and maybe next quarter to do a follow-up on all what you are telling us. We do appreciate this committee. This is an empowering to us, and also with the department, we will be part of them to do oversight in order that the improvement of the service delivery to our people. I thank you. I've seen the hand of Honorable Adams. I don't know whether maybe again he was being kicked off again. I've seen her hand, but I'm not seeing her again, because he reported that he has got a problem of load shedding. Can I give it to Umbali? Thank you so much, honorable members.
Thank you very much, honorable chair and members, for those questions and comments. I will respond to some of the questions and ask Ms. Mary to also add on the questions that I may have left out. Chairperson, we welcome the comments around the presentation itself, and that it's going to assist the committee in the oversight work that you're doing. In the main, Honorable Zondi points out the challenges around the concerning increase in irregular expenditure, and also most of the entities not complying with supply chain management legislation. And he also mentions that you require more details around the investigations at the NAC and also at PACOS. So I'm noting this then as concerns that the department will have to comment on or provide feedback on. What we've done in the briefing document was just highlight some of the key insights that we noted in as it relates to entities that we had investigations, like the NAC. You'll recall that there was a particular forensic investigation. We did get hold of the report through the department, and we did take note of what happened subsequent to the report. I think the committee will also be aware that both the CO and the CFO have exited the entity, and we highlighted our insights around the CO in particular, that then received a settlement when was the CFO was dismissed then subsequent to year end. Those are the insights that we took note of as it relates to the NAC. But of course, the department can provide more information on what transpired from their side after they got hold of the forensic report on the NAC. So on PACOS as well, there's a long-standing investigation that has been dragging for some time. And I think the department will also be better placed to provide more information why that investigation is taking much longer, because then that particular project is on hold whilst the investigation is still taking place regarding that particular amount that was under investigation. Honourable Chong raised a number of questions in the main around the NAC, the issue of irregular expenditure and requiring details thereof to say what caused or what's behind the irregular expenditure. As we mentioned in the presentation, most of it, the 16 million, is because they went over the budget. Then the remaining amount of 4 million relates to non-compliance with procurement processes. But at this point in time, Chairperson, we don't have the full breakdown of that irregular expenditure relating to supply chain management to indicate the exact findings that caused that irregular expenditure. Chairperson, that can be provided through you in writing. The issue of the reserves at the NAC is something also that we can also ask for more time to look into. But what I can mention is that if there are reserves and they are ring-fenced for a particular purpose, the entity cannot tap into them to then address the budget issue. I don't have full details on the reserves that NAC has, but my thinking is that that money may be ring-fenced for a particular project, and that is why they can't just use it. And also, they require an approval from National Treasury before they can use that money to attend to operational expenses if they're having budgetary constraints. Then in terms of recommendations at the NAC, again, I don't have the full breakdown right now, but from the findings that you are reporting, as we are saying that they are recurring, and that we see again material misstatements on the financial statements, we see non-compliance with supply chain management, and also the issue of the budget was also highlighted in the prior. So it just shows that, again, that the action plan was not properly implemented. The actions that were put in the plan were not monitored properly to ensure that they are fully addressed. So meaning that even our recommendations then, because our recommendations inform the action plan, were not fully implemented. Hence, we are reporting the same findings again at the entity. In terms of the action plans, Honorable Song asked, what must the committee then do in terms of now monitoring that matrix, whether the department or the entities are actually implementing the plans? So our recommendation in what we are highlighting is that through the department or the specific entities, they must indicate the findings that we are reporting, and then also on the same report indicate the action that put in place or that they've developed to address those findings, and then give feedback to the committee to say where are they in terms of implementing those actions. If for instance, it was a matter that needed to be corrected in the financial statements, whether that correction has been made or when are they going to make it? If it was the matter of internal controls being strengthened, what have they done then to strengthen the internal controls? Or if it was consequence management, have they really then done consequence management? Have disciplinary actions been taken? Have recoveries been made? Just to give comfort to the committee that they are addressing those particular issues to ensure that in the next year they do not recur. The question about the implementation of the white paper, we have not looked into that as part of the audit process. However, we can, going forward, just look into it if, as Honorable Song points out, it's a paper that needs to be implemented and more auditees other than EaseVigo, then we can zoom into it to see why is it not implemented. Obviously, working with the department to find out why is it not implemented at other entities as required. Honorable Sibiya, through your chair, also highlights the increase in non-compliance compared to the prior, and the question is what contributes to that particular increase, and also highlights the instability to say that we have a role to play in terms of the non-compliance that is being quoted. And I would say yes, Chair, because we are highlighting instability as part of the root causes behind the findings that you are reporting, because once there are vacancies, there may be then acting people. However, things do not move the same way as they would do when you have permanent people in those positions. So as a result, there may be gaps in internal control during that period when there's instability within the department or the entity, such that then certain processes are not properly followed, and that may result then in irregularities being committed, which is non-compliance with legislation. So there is a direct link between the two, and as I've highlighted, as part of the key root causes on the outcomes. Honorable Adams, through your chair, has also highlighted the issue of irregular expenditure and asked to say how must the portfolio committee deal in particular with the irregular expenditure from the previous financial years. So, Chair, the reason why we also highlight the irregular from the prior is because in terms of the PFMA, there are certain steps that the accounting officer or authority must take once irregular expenditure has been identified. And in the end, they are supposed to deal then with the backlog of irregular expenditure. It's not supposed to remain in the financial statements year after year. They are supposed to investigate it, take consequence management steps, ask for condonement once they've taken those steps, or even recover where it's necessary that they should recover certain monies from official. So what you are highlighting is that those processes are either taking longer, or in some entities, those processes are not taking place for them to deal with the irregular from the prior years. So it then links again with consequence management to say, have the accounting officer or authority implemented the right steps as highlighted in the PFMA in terms of dealing with the discovered irregular expenditure. So as you interact then with the department and the entities, again, it goes back to implementation of consequence management. And of course, the committee can also highlight this as part of the areas to focus on to say, how are the entities dealing with the irregular from prior years? Because as you identify irregular, you need to deal with it. And that is why then we see that there's a huge balance not dealt with, because these steps are not taking place as required. Then there was a comment around the plans that are not measurable that the department must comment on, and the performance of the department in the last 2 years. And I'm sure the department will comment on that analysis for the committee. And there was a question also about the report of the NAC. The department will also deal with that, as I indicated earlier. And then the $680 million for presidential employment stimulus package.
A moment. Sean, please mute.
Apologies.
Thank you so much. Okay, Mbani.
Thank you, Chair. So the 680 million was not only handled by the NAC, it was allocated to different entities. So in our presentations, we just highlighted the two because they received a bigger chunk of that 680 million, with NAC having received 300 million and the NFBF 140 million. Certain monies were also transferred to the National Library and other entities receiving the other balance. So just to answer that question, that they didn't get the full 680 million for the PEST initiative. They went on the 300 million, but because of the overcommitment, they went beyond 300 million. Then the question about internal audit and audit committees to say, if the entities have recurring findings, does it mean that they are not hitting the call from the audit committees or internal audit, because they are the sort of like the first line to advise the internal controls effective or not, so that the accounting officer can strengthen the controls, or if there's non-compliance, they highlight those to the accounting officers or authorities. It's a difficult one to answer, and it will differ from entity to entity. We do our own assessment at each entity to see whether the committee, first audit committee, has done their work as required by legislation in terms of all the key areas that they must look into. Same with internal audit, whether they've also performed their work in line with the mandate, looking at the plans, if they had a plan to look at certain areas, were they able to fully implement their plan? And if not, what is behind that? Because it impacts their role. So my advice on this one to the committee will be, again, to bring in the audit committee chairs, for instance, to just reflect, say, from their side, do they feel that they have done their part, and whether the department or the entities have heeded their call in terms of addressing prior findings or any non-compliance that was highlighted through our reports. Because from our side right now, I don't have a full report on all the audit keys to indicate to the committee whether in our own assessment, the audit committees had performed as required, in that they've given the advice, then it was up to the accounting officer authority to implement the advice from the committees, or whether they implemented all the recommendations from the internal audit. But indeed, it is correct that the accounting officer should use those reports from the internal audit to strengthen the environment in terms of internal control, because those are the focus areas of internal audit. So that before we come through as the AGSA, the internal audit has provided the accounting officer with all the gaps that needs to be closed to ensure that financial information or performance information that will be reported will in fact be credible. So they do have a key role to play in the accountability ecosystem. And at times, they may be impacted by capacity constraints. So if the internal audit doesn't have full capacity to, for instance, implement their plan for the year, that impacts also on the reports that they are going to give to the accounting office, where they have time to close the gaps before you come through as the AGSA. So, but again, maybe to assist the committee on this one, the audit committee will also have their own report in the annual report, and that is where they will also undertake to indicate what they've done during the year, if there are still gaps that they are not happy with in terms of the internal control environment or compliance, that will be detailed in their report, which is contained in the annual report. Then, Honorable Chair, you also asked some questions around the department itself in relation to your regular expenditure. My interpretation of your question, Chair, was that you were asking what have we done as the AG, perhaps to highlight the areas that they needed to investigate so that they deal with this issue of consequence management. Chair, as it relates to the instances that relate specifically to the department, we have highlighted our concerns or the warning through the status of records review that we did earlier this year, wherein we highlighted that the progress was slow in terms of the department investigating the allegations against officials. And in the end, when we reported, it became again a material non-compliance that you highlighted to the department. So I can say that we have tried to raise this before we came through for the audit, to say that the progress was not at the desired level in terms of ensuring that all the matters were being investigated. So those are the ones that relate specifically to the department. But on the entity side, the department may intervene and do investigations. However, those entities also have their own councils, which are the accounting authority, and the PSMA then gives that responsibility to the accounting authority to investigate irregular expenditure and also for effecting consequence management. But the department, because they play oversight role, they can follow up on those matters to ensure that indeed matters are being investigated and that consequences are being implemented by the entities. Then in terms of the irregular expenditure, Honorable Chair, I heard you mention that at times it could be that the provinces are not reporting, and this may be flagged at the department itself, the DSEC at national level. So in this regard, the 52 million that relates to non-compliance with the Division of Revenue Act happened at DSEC itself. It was not because the provinces were not reporting as required on whether monies were used for intended purpose. So what happened is that the department withheld the monies for certain reasons, which they can do. It's allowed in terms of the DORA requirements. But the last step that is required is that once they've done that and they've changed the payment schedule, it must be submitted to National Treasury, and Treasury must give approval before the payments are effected. So the department did not complete that full circle in terms of ensuring that where they had withheld the monies and changed the payment schedule, it was submitted, and that they waited for that particular approval from the National Treasury before they then undertook to make the payments. And that is how that matter became irregular expenditure. We were informed by the DG that they are already implementing consequence management around this particular matter of the payments that were made before approvals were obtained from National Treasury. And I think that the department can then provide more information to the committee on those particular steps that they are taking. Chairperson, I think the other two aspects were also just comments from your side, noting now the regression in terms of irregular expenditure, because it has indeed increased significantly to 105 million, and also the issue of vacancies and the instability in some entities, as the committee may be that there are a number of entities where there are acting key officials like the CEOs. If you look at PACOS, there's been a lot of acting roles in that position, CFOs, CEOs, and those are critical positions. Looking at state theater, boxing as well, the NAC. So there are a number of entities that are affected by the instability at key positions, which then impacts on their delivery and also in terms of dealing or preventing irregularities. Thanks, Chair. Umhimitsi, I'm not sure if there's something you wanted to add. We can give Umhimitsi a chance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Thank you. Okay, I have 2 points to add on. Firstly, it's around compliance, where members highlighted that there has been some concern around the increase on compliance issues. Just to break it down, we are having issues mainly relating to a few areas. The first one relates to non-compliance with the quality of financial statements. And we actually note that 15 of the 28 entities had material adjustments, and that would lead to a non-compliance with regards to legislation. Then we also have areas of consequence management, where our concern is that consequence management is not timely dealt with. And on that one, we have about 9 entities that have actually not properly dealt with consequence management timelessly. We also have issues around SCM where SCM prescripts would not have been followed before procurement processes are then concluded by the entities, which also talks to about 7 entities that we looked into. Then the other one would then be talking to irregular expenditure not having been prevented, and that also talks to about 7 of the entities. So those are the key issues that basically increased our compliance if one looks into it deeper. Just thought I should just clarify that part. And then talking to the NAC issue around the orchestra, the auditors have looked into that matter. However, NAC was not able to provide detailed audit evidence to indicate how the Mzansi Orchestra was then appointed or selected for funding. And 41 million was then raised as irregular expenditure under investigation, which will then be followed through. The non-compliance would then relate to the NAC Act, where they were supposed to have then followed the minimum criteria, as well as looking into whether they qualify, and the council approval process that should have then been taken or followed. And currently the challenge is to say NAC highlighted that the department would have indicated that this is the entity to be supported and they should then support the NPO, which is private. But we will look into that matter into the upcoming financial year as part of our follow-up. Currently it's a regular expenditure under investigation. I think those are the two areas that I thought I should add on that have not been covered yet. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mbali and Ompemetri. Honorable members, I'm suspecting we've exhausted the questions to the AG. Can you allow me now to ask the department to take their time or stage, or they must present their overview on that now. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mbali and Ompemisi. We'll make our program according to your reporting. And now we are well informed, and we'll take your advices, and we'll take what we want to do a follow-up out of your reporting. We'll always appreciate what you are doing for the country. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Acting DG.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable members of the committee. Chair, I just missed a bit. I don't know whether the Chair was saying if we could proceed with the present, the overview that we need to make for the HOF.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I would request, without any further waste of time, DDG Sumaya to provide that overview. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members, ADG and colleagues, and to the leadership of the South African Hockey Association. Chairperson, let me indicate at the outset that we provided the Portfolio Committee Secretariat with the overview of the department, and the South African Hockey Association also provided their own presentation. And there may have been a little bit of a confusion because the South African Hockey Association also used our template as a department to put their content into it.
Just a moment, DDG. I'm sorry about that, DTG. I was trying to check, you know, this saying of the women that we are multitask ones. So I was checking. I did release UAHD. So when I was thinking, you know, I'm suspecting if I didn't say that you are released, let me say so. I thank you. Sorry. It is just so my thought about that. Okay, go on.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, it's not a problem. Chairperson, I was just explaining that our presentation of the overview may look very much the same as the presentation that the SA Hockey Association has sent through. It's just that they may have used our template, but the content is different. So it's just so that it doesn't, just to clear that if there may have been any confusion around the documents. Chairperson, just this is an overview to the Portfolio Committee on Sports, Arts and Culture on the South African Hockey Association. And the focus of this presentation is, as the Portfolio Committee notice has indicated, and this is a briefing by the SA Hockey Association on their annual report, their financial report, infrastructure, school sport and development programs, governance and related issues. So our overview will also focus on that, Chairperson. In terms of the governance issues, since the declaration of COVID-19, the key South African Hockey Association annual projects and programs were postponed. But the SA Hockey Association used the opportunity to stabilize the governance-related matters by convening a council meeting on the 19th of September. And further, during the annual general meeting, they hosted this in November 2021. Three vacant positions were filled through the elections, namely the vice president, the high performance and technical support officials. And on the 14th of April 2021, they've had an appointment of an acting CEO due to the vacancy left when the incumbent CEO, Ms. Langeni, left. And this was done by the management. In terms of financial support to the South African Hockey Association in 2021-2022, we gave them an amount of 4 million rands. And this support was earmarked for the following priority areas. It was the modified schools hockey. It was the modified junior clubs. It was the high performance under 21 team. It was preparations for the Commonwealth Games and also for capacity building initiatives. Next slide. Further, in the current financial year, the South African Hockey Association has not yet received the funding due to partial submission of their compliance documents. The annual general meeting of hockey is planned for the 3rd of December 2022, and the annual financial statements and annual report will be presented at this meeting for adoption. These would thereafter be submitted to the DSAC for processing of funds transfer. And this, Madam Chair, is in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act, that where entities have been provided with funding, before they get any new funding, they have to comply with the PFMA, which requires them to provide an audited financial statement that has been presented to the council, and it is council resolution to pass the to adopt the annual financial statements is required. So after that process, which they hope to have in December, we will then transfer the money to them. In the meantime, they have already given us some of their compliance documents. It should also be noted that the Hockey Association financial year is aligned with that of the department. The only challenge is that they convene the annual general meeting in December, wherein the annual financial statements are tabled and for adoption. We have recommended to Hockey that they convene their AGM earlier in the year, possibly in the first quarter of the financial year, so it makes it then easier for us to give them their allocation for the current financial year. In terms of their achievements for 2021-2022, they have established the International Hockey Federation Online Academy. So it has been endorsed by the FIH. And their continued growth of modified hockey in over 30 districts and the hosting of the 2021 Junior World Cup that took place in the Northwest. Next slide. In terms of school sport support for the SA Hockey Association, school sport is part of the Winter National School Sport Championships, which facilitates the development, which facilitates development and talent identification. The age group in the championships is the under 14, both girls and boys. A total of 270 athletes from all provinces participated in the 2022 Winter National School Sport Championships. Additionally, the Winter National School Sport Championships assists in facilitating development of young technical officials by providing an environment for them to officiate at a national level. Schools hockey is further supported by funding through provinces for training of educators and community volunteers linked with schools. And that, Madam Chair, is the brief overview from the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable the DTC Sumaya. Now, let's check and let him give the slot to South African Hockey Association. Let's welcome them and let me give it to the president of it. President of Hockey. Okay, go on.
Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Can I share? I have shared already. On behalf, can you see my slides here?
Yes. If you don't have problem, you can leave your auto, but if not, you can switch off. We've seen you beautiful face, well presented, presenting yourself. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of SA Hockey, we thank you all for allowing us to present today. I just need to reinforce the apologies given at the start, where my president is still en route. I think he's just landed now, but he will join us as soon as he can. Also, our vice president, who would have stood in for him, Ms. Lwandeli Simelane, who is writing an exam this morning. But please allow me to introduce the board members who are present this morning, which is Gary Carson, our treasurer and events portfolio holder, Reggie Smith, our high performance executive, Wendell Domingo, president of SA Schools Hockey, Gary Dolly, our project manager, who currently runs our growth strategy at SA Hockey. Allow me to take us through the contents of our presentation. We'll first cover governance, followed by a couple of slides on our winning nation, then active national follow, and then I'll speak about our legacy program. And hopefully by that stage, our president would be on the call and then he could conclude the session. Firstly, if I speak to you about our governance, we've concluded our annual audit for 2021. It was successfully concluded and approved at our AGM in November last year. And our 2022 audit is currently underway. As said by the DDG, we had our AGM on the 27th of November 2021, and the positions that were up for re-election was governance, our high performance, rules and technical and education, and these positions were filled. in 2022, we've scheduled our AGM for the 4th of December. The positions that's up for election is our president, treasurer, and our events portfolio. With regards to our policy, we've got a draft safeguarding policy, which we've also formed a committee around that to take our safeguarding policy further. We anticipate that we'll have something implemented in January with the rollout. And our safeguarding policy will be rolled out at school level as well. We've also in the process of reviewing our selection policy in order to make it more robust and allow for a wider pool of possible players for selection. And then thirdly, in November last year, prior to our AGM and our council meeting, we spent the day reviewing our strategic plan. With regards to our 2022 financials, we've got our draft income and expenditure statement, and I'll just run through some salient points. Our revenue for the year, the period just concluded, is 14 million, which obviously includes government grants and sponsorship, sponsorship to the tune of 2 million. International events with 2.3 million came in on the operating expense side. We've expended over 13 million, with the most being in our events and camps of 7.4 million. And then on our administration and management fees, 1.3, and also support and workshops of 1.8. Our net profit, draft net profit figure so far is 367,000. And obviously with this being draft, we will only know the true position after our financials have been audited. From an EPG perspective, the last EPG report that we had was 2020. As far as the barometer target achievement is concerned, of the categories that we had target set in, 26, and we achieved 15 of them, which gives us a percentage of 58%. On the 6th of August 2020, we spoke to that EPG report, and I will cover some of the salient points in the following two slides. Clearly, COVID hard lockdown impacted hockey in general, and we did feel the effects for the next, in 2021, as well as some of it this earlier this year. One of the undertakings one of the undertakings to address the shortfalls in our EPG report was our modified club and modified schools implementation, which we fast-tracked, and I'm pleased to say that this has been going well. I'll now speak to you about our winning nation. Over the period 2021 to 2022, we've attended a lot and lots of events. Obviously, Tokyo Olympics, both men and women, Junior World Cup for our men, Africa Cup in Ghana for men and women, Pro League Round 1, which was held in South Africa in Poch, and that our men attended, our Junior World Cup, also in Poch Northwest, where our junior women attended, Pro League Round 2, which was in Argentina, then Pro League Round 3 was England, Spain, and Brussels. That's where our men attended. Our women attended World Cup in Tarrasa, Spain, just before Commonwealth Games, and both men and women as preparation just on route to Commonwealth Games. They were in Wales, and then both men and ladies were at the Commonwealth Games. And in amongst that, we had Hockey 5. That was an inaugural tournament that was held in Geneva, Lausanne. And then for 2022, our rankings thus far, on the African continent, Armenia number one. Armenian indoor team is also number one. Junior indoor, junior men are also number one. International ranking, our men are ranked 12th in the world, whilst our indoor men are ranked 11th. On the women's front, we remain number one in field hockey. In the indoor sector, we are number two in Namibia. And then our junior women are number one in Africa still. Internationally, our women are ranked 16, and our indoor women are ranked 14. Currently, our national team status, national women's team demographics continue to grow. The target of 50% from under 18 level to senior level has been achieved despite the lockdown impact. And we continue to drive a transformation agenda at Easter Hockey. We also started focusing more so on the team management demographic. And we're pleased to say that at a national level, this is representative. Our under 18 and our under 21 junior team formed the passage into our national team, and the natural progression is continuous. On the men's front, yet again, I can confirm that our demographics from under 18 to senior level has been achieved at 50%. We also continue to drive the agenda there, the transformation agenda. And the agenda that's driven is not only from a player perspective, but also from a team management perspective. The inaugural Occupied tournament, we ended up third place. It was a small tournament by invitation, but years demographics were insisted upon and achieved. And we had 100% female management team, coach, manager, were all female. We're very pleased with the announcement of our goalkeeper in the top five internationally under the FIH Hockey Star Awards, and our coach also in the top five. These accolades that we are very proud of. If I speak about the immediate future, the following on the horizon for men and ladies. We've got a men's tournament, Sultan of Aslan Shah for the senior men in Malaysia. We've got Sultan of Johor under 21 men, which will travel to Malaysia. FIH Men's Nations Cup in Foch. FIH Women's Nations Cup in Teresa, Spain. FIH Men's World Cup in India early next year. African Club Challenge, which will be in Foch later this year as well. And the active nation, our growth strategy is aligned with the active nation philosophy. And this is done through modified hockey, where we focus on farm style one and two non-playing preschools. In line with our active nation concept, each child has the right to be physically active, is what we profess. And our modified hockey program, which we call Fun in Action, is aligned to the physical education curriculum and gives us access to all schools, exposing more children to be physically active. And this is also aligned with the UNESCO Charter. If we look at the key performance areas that's covered under our growth strategy and our modified hockey program, we're looking to measure the training courses and workshops conducted, equipment provided, number of schools in the program, number of new schools activated, number of participants in the different regions, number of festivals, and number of teachers trained. Under performance areas, I've just put in a sample of the types of reporting that we do have available. I will circulate via the department our stats of all the different districts that we've actually been at, communities, number of participants, number of coaches that have been exposed to our program. The idea of our modified program is specifically geared towards impacting our communities. And in that, we're looking to promote healthy lifestyles and being physically active. We've got online teacher training, and now with us going back to after the lockdown have been lifted, we now have face-to-face teacher training. We promote that mental health. Annually, we and more so now that we're back playing hockey, we've got a whole lot of heritage festivals within the community. This year, we've conducted across the country different groups of sessions where we had Heritage Day festivals, we had Youth Day festivals. Our Women's Day festival this year was focusing on the girl child, and then clearly Heritage Day festival. We've had partnership with Let's Play, and we've done a roadshow across the country to the facility where we had media coverage, and they've done a lot for uplifting the profile of the game. The theme for 2022 was that each child have a right to be physically active. From an endorsement point of view, we do have our presidents of SA schools on the call as well. But just to reinforce that at SA schools level, we all know that it's an integral part of our infrastructure in the country. But it's also part of SA Hockey Association, and they have a full executive position on our exec. They assisted and supported in operations and programs that we embark upon. And after the impact of COVID pandemic on school sports, SASCOC, SA Schools Hockey Council accepted and endorsed the primary school that primary school hockey should and will include and embrace the modified program. That is within the district and regional structures. It is a growth strategy of SA Hockey, and this is again reiterated and supported and endorsed by the recent meeting with the executive and subcommittees. The modified program within the district and region forms part of the development as a hockey community. The modified hockey coordinators are all an integral part of the district and regional primary committees, and they must report the progress of the program within the district and the school groups that are involved. That must be reported upwards. The statistics around the program must be included in the number of participating schools and players within the district and region. The cluster of schools within the modified program is encouraged and assisted to participate in weekly area games and quarterly festivals in the district. The aim is primarily that all participating schools will eventually participate in the formal league or hub structures of the primary schools. In this way, we'll all grow the game of hockey in areas that it has never played in before. The existing primary committee secretary has been mandated to oversee and monitor the progress of this initiative that has the support of SA Schools Hockey and SA Hockey. As a National Schools Executive Committee, they have created a specific modified hockey portfolio where the elected person will be responsible to liaise with the modified hockey coordinates, assist with modified coordinators, assisting the modified coordinators to formally be part of the primary committee in all districts and regions, liaising with the project manager in setting up new modified hubs, recommending and assisting to set up new modified hubs in areas where it's never been placed, coordinating a database of all modified hockey clubs and study hockey hubs, and then promoting modified hockey as SA Hockey sets of growth strategies to all primary schools, and in promoting modified hockey sports, district, provincial, national, DSAC, and DSRSC, and DSAC and DBE departments. Over and above what was presented above, it says school continues with a high performance program that feeds into the pipeline of the SA Hockey augmenting its under 21 and national teams. Following on Active Nation and our growth strategy, there's obviously a lot of opportunity areas such as growing hockey beyond the school and growing clubs. Also increasing the scale of modified hockey programs, develop meaningful and ongoing engagement within communities and Pontal 1 and 2 schools, and increasing the number of accredited coaches and umpires. We want to specifically increase female coaches and our coaching demographics, as well as our national team demographics. Our transformation objective is to grow the game, create new revenue opportunities, drive transformation engagement with stakeholders. And the benefits we see in this is retaining talent, support, communities and partnerships, unlocking new talent, coaches and partnerships, and being self-sufficient and stable. Just some of the stats relating to the modified program between April and September of this year. We had 44 regional events. Over 820 teachers, coaches were put through a learning intervention. And we had over 4,000 participants. Our target for 2022-23 is to activate 100 new schools and activate 100 new club teams. From an education point of view, we, with lockdown being lifted, we now have face-to-face courses. We have not done away with our online courses, so we offer online courses as well, and that we will increase over time as the need arises. Because of the nature of the online courses, it allows us to get into all areas of South Africa. We've got a single integrated coach accreditation framework, which is supported by ESIH. And our courses are really well sought after in the country. From a legacy point of view, we have just concluded the World Cup, the Masters World Cup in Cape Town. Last games were played yesterday. And during the course of the tournament, I'm just highlighting two of the examples of how this has brought not only tourists to our country, but also how these tourists went out and contributed to our different areas. The Dutch ladies visited the veggie farm in Tailandia, and there they other than helping them and planting on the day, they contributed over 140,000 to that particular farm. Whilst the German men were at Central Hockey, where they ran a clinic and they handed out sticks, shirts and shoes. And on Friday last week, they also gave a generous donation, which included goalkeeper sticks and shirts to the tune of about 60,000. Then on Saturday morning, we had an activation of 80 kids, which was really a spectacle to watch. They played some games, and clearly they were taught some fundamental skills. I will now cover some closing remarks. I just need to check if my president is online yet or not.
So, the president is
Madam Chair, not yet. I will try and see if I can contact him telephonically.
That's not too funny. What I will do.
No, leave the closing remarks maybe when we are about to finish. He will be with us. Thank you so much for the presentation, and which means now we are going to be on your own because we cannot postpone questions out of the presentation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. If at all possible, I do have the support of our executive members here, and
That's fine. They must join. If they didn't join, they were supposed to be in already. Thank you so much, Sean. Honorable members, can I give it to you the time that you must engage with the presentation? I've seen Honorable Zondi, Honorable Denise, and I've been told that Honorable Van Dijk got some questions. Uzoleka will read those questions. Let me start. Honorable Zondi, Honorable Denise, Honorable Sibiya, Honorable Mamabolo, in that order.
Thank you very much. We appreciate and welcome the presentation by Hockey South Africa. A few questions quickly, Chair. The first one, Chair, the national hockey team has been doing very well globally, not in the continent. It's one of the South African national teams that are doing very well. But Chair, I just want to know, what are the current challenges that are making it difficult for the sport to attract sponsors? The second one, Chair, is how is the department assisting Hockey South Africa to achieve its transformation objectives in terms of resources, in particular the in their budget? The annual grant of 4 million, is it enough for them to achieve their objective? And the third one, Chair, can South African Hockey take the committee through with their safeguarding policies? Have there been any reported cases of any form of abuse of players over the past 5 years in the sport of hockey? And the last one, Chair, what is their relationship with the South African Institute for Drugs Free Sport? Thank you, Chair. I'll pause for that.
Thank you, Honorable Zondi. Honorable Denise.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the African Hockey Association and to the department for the presentations. Chairperson, I would just like to ask Ms. Khan if she's tracking the progress, the status of the CEO. I think if I've heard correctly, the person is there since April, acting CEO, and she's tracking that. I would like to ask the department, Ms. Khan, if this partial submission of the compliance, if it is the first time that they experienced this with Hockey Association, or is it a recurrence, a reoccurrence? I understand the idea of the AGMs, which must fall in line with our financial financiers of the department, but the department, you know, there's kind of three financial years in 1 year that you are dealing with as to but the one that I want to focus on is what all the entities must do. So I'm not too clear when other entities have AGMs and then report and why this hockey have to specifically come in line with the department, and if that is a standard for all the other sports codes and entities as well. To the lady, thank you very much for from SA Hockey Association. I would like to know, the word modified was mentioned several times in the slides, and I'm still not sure what modified means. So if you take modified out of hockey, what would it mean? What would it mean for me or for you? So I just need a bit, you said it's going well, but I wanted just more understanding why is the word modified hockey so critical and important. Chairperson, I heard how big hockey is. I've in the schools in the provinces, but I didn't get the total amount. Otherwise, I would have, you know, not asked it. But I wasn't clear on how many players, how big is hockey in terms of the amount of players that is in the country playing the game. And then I would like to know on the financial report, the affiliation fees over 2 million, what does that constitute? The affiliation to what, to where, you know, region, province, national, international? I need a bit of clarity on that affiliation. And then the ranking, which is positive, which I've heard, but I've also heard, as the previous member asked about the ranking, but the ranking on the indoor, I think that the indoor hockey, which is very different to the other ranking in Africa. And so I'd like to know, what is the difference? Why is there a difference with normal ranking and indoor ranking? The transformation, it's important, very important for our country and for our sports. The pictures does not fully sort of clarify that, but I've heard your report on what you are doing there to transformation. But I want to ask the point on transformation. The interest at public schools, Chairperson, I want to ask, versus Model C schools and private schools. My son played hockey at Berkeley High, and it's a massive big interest in that sports and hockey fields. But I wanted to know what is the balance? How do you measure that balance between Model C schools, private schools, and the strength or the interest in public schools. I would like to know who fund all these teams that goes overseas. And, I heard the 4 million that Ms. Khan spoke about. I'm not sure if that is enough, but also the one my member asked about your funding. Do you get funding from the private sector and from where? And do disabled people also play hockey? I'm not sure if I've, somewhere there was a slide, but I didn't pick that up. And then a comment, Chairperson, just two comments in closing. I want to acknowledge your comment on the that you participate in national holidays, especially the ones that's linked to our department. I think that's something good. I didn't hear anything about tertiary level specifically. I heard about clubs and regions, but I'm not sure if the universities are participating in hockey and their role into hockey itself. And then the last comment, Chairperson, on the tourist involvement in the community. It's very good to relate them to projects, but it may be also good if you can tell these tourists if they're here, because they where their fathers and mothers and uncles were buried, because they are part of our history, colonial history. So maybe you must also take the opportunity to engage with them on that part of their history when they come here as tourists. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph. Honorable Sebiya.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I think my questions are covered on the issue of challenges being faced by SAHA as well as disabled persons. We need to know whether are they the part of playing the hockey. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sevilla. The next honorable member is Honorable Mamabulo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My question will be around the development, the grassroots development. Because I've been watching them at Birmingham during the Commonwealth Games. And then I could see well, somewhere we're doing well, and somewhere we're not doing well. We're beat by the legs of this European teams. So I want to check what, in terms of grassroots level, what do they do? Maybe in your rural schools or your, what you call township schools. Because in my view, in order for us to meet this thing of quota and also transformation, we need to start developing players in rural and rural areas and township areas. Because now I know for a fact that in Polokwane, for example, you only see the hockey courts in the suburbs, in your private schools, in this former modern schools, but you'll never see them in townships. The Department of Sports, how are we going to make sure when we start building this hockey court in townships and so on? I mean, also, you can talk to the likes of lottery can assist and blah, blah. Because it can't be that we only watch hockey in cities. Now I'm from the show, a township called the show. There's no hockey there. There's nothing happening there. And once you start seeing it, man, I mean, this thing is not only meant for a particular group or a particular people. How are we going to make sure that we start seeing hockey in townships and so on? We can even use the indoors, the indoor venues, if you don't have the hockey court, so that our kids can start playing. I'm happy they have indicated that they have got the under-19s, under-15s, 17s, and so on, which is good, which will be for additional teams. So I'm worried about grassroots. How are we going to be able to make sure that we develop players? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mamabulo. Honorable Adams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, allow me to switch off my video. Thank you, Chairperson. I also wanted to welcome the presentation. My questions will be, Chairperson, we are aware that funds may be received from DSEC will not be enough. What innovative measures has the Federation taken to attract sponsorship? And the other question, Chairperson, we are aware of previous hockey coaches and volunteers in disadvantaged areas are at home or maybe doing nothing. What is the Federation doing to develop them? I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Adams. Let me also raise some few questions.
Chairperson, sorry to interrupt. Member Mslongo is trying to get through also to ask questions. He's got a connection problem. I just wanted to let you know. Sorry for the interruption. Thank you.
Can Honorable Mslongo submit the questions to Honorable to Zoleka, because I'm about to give chance to Uzoleka to give us the questions from Honorable Van Dijk. Really, the load shedding is dealing with us. Please communicate with the Honorable Mhlongo, Honorable Joseph. And I'm suspecting even Honorable Van Dijk. Yeah, and I did give it to Uzolek. Okay. Thank you so much for the presentation. I've been informed that the president now has joined us. On what Honorable Mamabulo was asking about the hockey in other rural and other location, I must I must indicate being myself as a member of this committee, but also having a constituency in Kwalanga. I can declare here that the Langa Hockey Club in the Langa Township, where I'm having a constituency, has been found to be one of the most successful developmental projects of the introducing hockey within townships. And then what needs to be done in order that you must replicate this across other townships. And as I've said, that as Honorable Mamabulo alluded to the other townships and rural areas in our country, if you can use the strategy that you have used in the Langa Hockey Club. And then the men's national team had to raise funds to go to the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. Why did the team have to raise its own funds? Maybe this contribution and contribution from Honorable Mamabulo that maybe could also SASCOC pay for the team to the games. But we know how SASCOC is working. Maybe you can reflect on that. But also, we appreciate that you are doing well, irrespective of the weekly resources that we are having. Let me check, Zoleka, can you read the questions? Oh, no, this is the hand. Before that, seeming the Honorable Mhlongo now has got a chance. Honorable Mhlongo? After Honorable Mhlongo, Zoleka will be reading the questions from Honorable Van Dijk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I apologize because I have calling. Sure. I wanted to find out, I welcome the presentation. I wanted to find out, is it feasible for us as a sporting coach or as a department to support Ihoki with only 4 million rand? Why I'm asking this, I think for us to promote transformation, or the agenda for transformation, we need to support the more than 4 million. Apology for that. And Chamira, I'll be repeating questions if they've asked several questions. For an example, what are the challenges for Hoki to get sponsorship? If any, give us the name of the companies that support Hoki. And what is the department Sorry, Chair, thank you, Jim. I really apologize.
Okay. Take a sip of water and relax. We know this challenge of in load shedding. You can run around sometimes, even during the night when we are having a meeting. And one other time, I had to get us out to the lights very far from the house, taking a blanket. So even then, you will be rushing that you must not miss your turn. Yes. We do understand where we are.
Thank you. I've just taken note, Tanya Bongache. What will the department, or how will the department assist Hoki to achieve transformation objectives as we are getting only four million rand annually? And I can put it to you, Chairperson, the 4 million is not enough. And I wanted to welcome a presentation. I wanted to ask the department, can they give us exactly what modulation or what federation, because all federation are getting less than 4, or others are getting 5, but not more than 5 million. How are we going to promote a transformation agenda in different sporting code? And how is the department or the government in partnership with different public partnership to promote these sectors, especially Guma private partnership, for us to promote or for us to make sure that they support the sporting code? What plans does we have for us to participate in Olympic 2024 in Paris? And this federation, previously have we engaged a portfolio? The last time I was not part of the portfolio committee, I think it was 2016 when I checked the books. And where, what were the actual challenges and the issues at that time? And have you moved from those challenges to new challenges, if any? Thank you very much for now, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mshongo. So, Leka, can you read the questions from Honorable
Thank Bandit. You. Thank you, Madam Chair. These are the questions. What is SA Hockey Association's child safeguarding policy, and how does SA Hockey employ their coaches? In particular, how did a West Rand club using school ground employ a coach who was a convicted sex offender from the UK while he was still on a ban from working with children in the UK after serving jail time? Who would be held accountable for this? What are hockey protocols for managing the abuse of children by children? Is there a current case in school hockey that happened at a national tournament? Who does provincial hockey report to, and who do committee members report to if they are not satisfied with how SA Hockey dealt with a victim and a case? And the last one is, does provincial hockey report to national hockey or SASCOC and the Department of Basic Education? Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. So let's welcome the president of hockey. We did get early in the morning that you are flying down, and Ushoni has done a good job, presented, and waited patiently for you. So can we welcome you, Don Morgan, and now you may not have some questions, but those questions that you did get whilst you getting in, you will assist Ushon. Greet us, Dion. If you still have a luxury of electricity, you can leave your your picture, but sometimes this problems of load shedding can jeopardize you whilst your video is on. We have seen you, or can switch it off and greet us. I thank you, President.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I apologise once again, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for being late. I had a flight, as Sean would have alluded earlier. But thank you for affording us the opportunity to meet with you. Like you rightfully said, I didn't get all the questions, but I'll be here to assist and jump in where I can with the feedback from the team.
Thank you. You must go on. Sean and the President, you must share answering, and the other members which are here in the platform. It's the time now to answer the questions. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think a lot of the questions that raised, if I hand over to our project manager, Mr. Gary Dolly, if he paints the picture of what modified is, the areas that we cover, I think a fair amount of the questions will be answered across the board. And then I'll obviously pick up on the other questions if it's in order. Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Gary.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. Let us deal quickly with, I think, modified hockey, because I think that was a question that came up, in fact, from one of the members. Modified hockey is our growth strategy. It is a simplified version right, of hockey that can be played on any surface, right, and it is linked to physical education and fundamental movement skills. So any smooth surface can be converted into a facility. The sticks that we use are plastic sticks. The ball is a bit bigger, right, and it makes it very, very easy to convert any tennis court or street or indoor classroom into a playing area. And that is the strategy for us to negate, in fact, the lack of facilities in some of our communities. The reason why we've gone the modified route, it is very, very cost effective to implement. And you'll notice that we have tried to activate this within the hubs throughout the country, within the 52 districts. Currently, we have a footprint in 37 of the districts, and our target is to have a footprint in all 52 districts throughout the country, irrespective if it is a rural area or if it's an urban area or a township area. By introducing modified hockey or modified sport as part of physical education, it also gives us an opportunity to go directly into the schools and use hockey as a station within physical education during school time, because there's an allocation for modified sport as part of physical education. And that's the reason why we have gone this particular route. Another important aspect is that in terms of growing the game is to educate, in fact, the educators. And one of the members have alluded to this. What we are trying to establish within our modified structure, it has five components or five important aspects. The first one is the promotion of fundamental movement skills as part of physical education. The second component is, in fact, the promotion of inter-class modified games, inter-class within a class. The third component is inter-grade. So, for example, grade 3A would play or participate against 3B. So that is grade, the inter-grade program. And then the fourth one is within a particular community, around a school with a facility or a hall or any tennis court, we talk about a neighborhood league, which comprises five schools, a minimum of five schools, and a maximum of eight schools around that particular facility. And then ultimately, we want to talk about junior sport within our communities. And the reason why we've also gone this route, it is decreases the transport costs for schools to travel and compete outside the area. So that is modified sport, modified hockey. It is a concept, in fact, that is very, very well versed within physical education as well. I think the other issue that was raised in terms of safeguarding, what we have done as part of our strategy is to include a massive module in terms of safeguarding, in terms of our coach education and teacher training as well. There is a standalone safeguarding policy in terms of reporting, you know, the whole question of getting the coaches and reporting structure that we are putting in place. We are doing, in fact, the presentation to our council for acceptance and then roll out in all of our districts as well as in our provinces in 2023 as part of our rollout strategy in terms of safeguarding. But I think we've been very, very successful in terms of incorporating our safeguarding as part of coach education or teacher training within our coach education module. From a growth strategy as well, I think the whole question of rural sport is very important. That is the reason why we've linked, in fact, our strategy with UNESCO in terms of the rights of a child in terms of physical education. But we're trying very, very hard to form partnerships now with the Department of Education, because the material that we've developed talks about, you know, teacher training. And so that is an area that we're working very, very hard in trying to advocate and promote, in fact, our programs as part of an holistic development of the child within sport and education as well. I hope that that answers the questions on modified sport or modified hockey and our growth strategy that is, in fact, going very, very well. Now we've got 37 districts that we've activated, and my last count was close to 400 schools that we have already, you know, activated this particular program in. And next year, we want to, in fact, consolidate our neighborhood leagues within the different communities. And I think, Madam Chair, you are quite correct. In Langa, it's one of the flagships. So we have that.